Tonight I want to talk about what disability can teach us. And it really is a rich area for learning. And I'm not talking just about other people's experience. We've all been disabled for years. We couldn't walk, feed ourselves, speak, or get to the bathroom. And it's kind of too bad we can't remember this. Maybe we didn't experience our infancy as a loss. You know, but babies do show frustration when they're trying to learn how to do these things. The strength and motor skills most adults take for granted are not mastered for several decades, at least over one decade for most people. And once we achieve them, we start thinking that that's how it's supposed to be. And anything less than peak performance feels like we've lost our wholeness. And it's really too bad that this is the way most of us think and feel about this, because on average, physical ability follows a kind of a bell curve through the course of our lives. Just as we progressively gained abilities in the first years of our lives, most people spend the last years of their lives losing those abilities. Numerous factors can prolong our period of fitness, but there are absolutely countless things that can diminish it, and sometimes with breathtaking speed. 1 minute, you think you're fine, and the next minute, there are a lot of things you simply can't do. And for many years, I've suspected that fitness buffs are aware of this. They know this, but they're rigidly following their regimen as a kind of magic ritual to ward off bad luck. There are Buddhist practices and teachings that can help us as we confront the vicissitudes of gain and loss of our mastery over this world, particularly the teaching of the three characteristics, impermanence, suffering, or dukkha, and anatta, the idea that we're not what we think we are. I think the important thing with anatta to remember in relation to disability is that there's no justification really for taking it personally. You know, whatever the ability is, it's not mine. It's not me. I shouldn't think of it as I. In addition, just the practice of meditation can help us contemplate disability, because it's a constant practice of accepting of the fact that the mind has wandered. When we thought we were going to be paying attention to the breathing or the present moment. And also accepting what it is that the mind has been doing while it's off playing by itself. Sometimes it's not so pretty. So letting ourselves accept a range of ability other than what we think of as normal will allow us as individuals and as a society to cope better with the reality that all human lives include disabilities at some time and to some degree. Now, I have to be upfront that there are many things in Buddhism that are not helpful in dealing with disabilities. And in particular, the doctrines of karma, and reincarnation can be and have been interpreted in a way that can increase disabled people's sense of isolation, especially when they seem to blame people for their misfortunes. And by this I'm referring to the idea that if you have something wrong with you in this life, it's because you did something wrong in the last life. And this is like a double whammy of being held in less than the highest regard. And even the emphasis that I just put on acceptance can be a burden for people who are quite understandably grieving for lost access to activities and experiences, or facing a future of physical pain. You know, just accept it is not welcome advice. So one of the major roots of our difficulty with disability is identifying with the body. And I think Deb talked about this just the other week, how we think of ourselves in terms of our appearance, our physical strength, agility, and endurance, our senses, sight, hearing, taste, smell, touch, and our mental capacity. We like to think that we fit within the bounds of normal, or at least to be able to pass for normal, however briefly. And when we can't, it's often a source of mental and emotional distress because society puts so much emphasis on normalcy or not being different. I mean, you know, we were all in grade school at one point and remember how vicious kids can be toward someone who was different in some way. And this demand for being normal assaults our sense of self, especially when we're defined by a disability, whether we're defined that way by ourselves or by others. It's important for all of us, whether you're a TAB, temporarily able-bodied, or disabled, to understand that I am not my body. We are currently embodied awareness. Notice the emphasis on currently. But we're much more than body, mind, social status, etc., all put together. For the most part, most of us live in a world that has been constructed by humans for humans. Now, I probably would have been very comfortable in this human-manufactured world back in the 1800s, when most people were significantly shorter than the average is now. But in most chairs, my feet don't reach the ground. And in airplanes, I'm miserable. And that's true for my friends who are like over 6'4". You know, there's just this middle strip of normal that we've built this world for. Now, I have to say that you know, in the 1800s, there were no accommodations for people with illnesses or disabilities. And outside of the United States, try taking the Paris Metro if you can't go up and down steps. So every little bit of improvement is welcome. People who don't have the use of limbs or senses or whatever have to retool their whole world. And even then, there are still areas of exclusion. Places where they can't go or they can't get the benefit of going there, like movies for blind people or social gatherings for deaf people. Sometimes even here at Alameda Sangha, which, thanks to Judy, some improvement is being made there. Then there are buildings without ramps or elevators. They're just not doable for people in wheelchairs. The reason why this is so intractable is that most people don't want to think about disability, or aging, for that matter. We just don't want to confront this fear that we have, let alone accept the fact that it was part of our past and it's probably going to be part of our future. And it could happen at any moment. So, I mean, automobiles, tremendous risk that we're taking. Now, I can't remember the author, and I'm sorry, because it's a great quote. Something along the lines of, the most amazing thing about human beings is that everyone knows that all people die, and yet each of us still believes we won't. It's a similar thing with disability. My disability came on very suddenly. I was at work in my office at my law firm, and all of a sudden, parts of my body went into spasms and started moving uncontrollably. It was a very unpleasant feeling, and it was terrifying. But I was very fortunate because I had studied Buddhism. I hadn't really practiced it, but I'd studied it, and I knew instantly not to fight it, either physically or emotionally, and just let it happen, and it passed. And that's how it's been. You know, if I fight it, it lasts longer, and if I just let it be, usually it's over in a moment. But acceptance is hard, and it's understandable with all of the social and psychological factors working against it. But it's even harder to be happy if we don't accept it. Just as it's true with the many other challenges that we face in life, acceptance is the key to living with it. So intentionally thinking about disability can open us up to a new dimension of compassion and a willingness to help others and prepare us for when we lose abilities. Over the last couple decades, I've watched my parents and my siblings lose vision, hearing, mobility, stamina. And I've already lost some mobility, but I'm in a period of improvement now. But I know better than to think that it's going to be permanent. And my mind, I can see it preparing for a time when I'm going to be living a low vision, low hearing, fairly stationary lifestyle. While I'm recommending that we think about disabilities, not just, you know, our own, but also open our minds to the experiences of others, it's true, though, that it's very hard to know what someone else's experience is. At East Bay Meditation Center, Deb and I are both teachers of a group called the Everybody, Every Mind Sangha. That's for people with any kind of disability. And that group, it's wonderful how it's developed over the couple of years it's existed now. We keep learning more and more about each other's experiences with a wide variety of disabilities. And this has taken time and sensitivity to learn, because it's a part of our lives where there's been a lot of struggle, both with our own limitations and the social restrictions and ignorance of other people. There was a recent email exchange among the EBEM teachers and volunteers that taught me more about the challenges that are faced by people with multiple chemical sensitivities, or MCS. You may have heard of that. It's where any kind of fragrance will make people sick. Even natural fragrance, but usually chemical. Someone attended EBEM wearing a fragranced product, and the other Sangha members didn't smell it, but the person with MCS became sick. And, you know, it was up to her to have to bring up the fact that there was someone in the room wearing. It's just a terribly awkward situation to be in. Musham, one of the teachers there, later explained in an email when she spoke to someone, and I'll quote, "wearing scented products, their desire is often to come closer to me to explain, A, they are a good person and did not intend to injure me, and or B, they know for a fact they are not wearing any scented products, so I must be mistaken in my perception of them." She says, "the closer they come to me physically increases the speed with which I feel more and more ill. So it's difficult to impossible to find a way to speak calmly and kindly to them without increasing the negative impact on my health." In our society, she says, asking someone to back away or explaining that you are backing away from them often triggers in them a feeling of being rejected, excluded, and disliked. What a lot to deal with. If you have that kind of a barrier between your health and the cooperation of other people. So when I asked the EBEM members what disability has taught them, they said, and this is the short list, but the main things were patience, appreciation for their practice and how it's helped them get through their lives, and appreciation for the joy in life, and that they had gained an ability to understand the difficulties of others. These are all things that we too can acquire without having those disabilities through mindfulness and compassion. All we have to do is pay attention to our own disabilities, even though they may be temporary and relatively minor. Watching ourselves cope with inconvenience, frustration, loss of opportunities, and isolation from illness, injury, whatever, can really open our hearts and minds to ourselves and to others. So, you know, the next time you break your toe, take the opportunity to learn. Now, along with finding out what the members of EBEM gained from their disability, I also learn what they want us to know, and that is they don't always need our help, but usually appreciate if it's offered, such as a door being held open. And this one came up a lot. Helping doesn't make us heroes. So don't make a big deal of it. And this is probably not referring to you. It's probably nothing you need, but this is what they said. Not to resent being asked for help. If you can't, just say so politely. And please don't stare or be embarrassed. Recognize that disability is normal. We've had it throughout the history of the species. And include it in your expectation of others. And kind of a sad example that I witnessed was the last day of the last retreat of the teacher training program that I was in, CDL. What was organized to bring us all together was a hike, which left a handful of people behind. So, hidden disabilities don't have to meet our definition. Someone who walks normally may be able to do that only occasionally, or with difficulty, or only short distances. Here's an example of how dumb definitions of disability can be. There was a rock star who I will not name because I got this secondhand. I wasn't there. But maybe it's an urban legend, but he is said to have stopped the concert because there were a few people in the front row who hadn't joined everybody else in dancing. And when he asked them why not, and they said they couldn't, he demanded proof in terms of seeing the wheelchair, the prosthetic leg, and the handicap pass. Now, I don't know if that raised the hairs on the back of your neck, but it doesn't help to demonize anyone's ignorance or insensitivity. Although, you know, there's this little frisson of delight at being politically correct, that passes quickly and it leaves a sour aftertaste, just like cheap candy. Just noticing, though, how we and others perceive and respond to disability will offer us an invaluable education in our true nature and help us uproot many of the causes of suffering from our own hearts. Thank you.